pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program. Coming up on the program this morning, about a half hour from now, we have my colleague at 1819 News, Brian Dawson, join us. So yeah, interesting conversation recently about the role of I guess fathers in the home, and with another talk show host, I'll name him, Rick Burgess of Rick and Bubba fame. But I think this is an important topic to discuss, just in general. But we're going to get into that with Brian. That's coming up about a half hour. It's sort of the father's supposed to play a spiritual role inside the family, but yet society has said, hey, let's back off the manhood stuff. Let's back off all. That's all old-timey, patriarchal, you know. We can't have that. So that's coming up in about a half hour. Brian Bradley of the Media Research Center, Tuesday regular, coming up as well. 10 o'clock hour. Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kinnon. So Tony Kinnon getting the privilege, or the honor, I should say, of J.D. Crow's, I don't want to call it artwork, J.D. Crow's ether-induced angry scribblings. Anyway, AL.com political cartoonist, if you're not familiar with who J.D. Crow is, but most of you are. Most of you remember when there were newspapers in Mobile on a daily, regularly. However, Tony Kidd had taken exception to badass coffee. Guess I shouldn't say that on the radio, but seeing the sign up, and we'll talk to him about that. Also hear from him about how things are going down there on the beach. We always send an invitation to Robert Kraft of Gulf Shores. He makes himself scarce. I don't know why. It's not like this is a hardball type of setting, but Mayor Kinnon always happy to oblige, and he is coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Finally, in the 11 o'clock hour, another friend of mine from Right Side Radio, former state senator Phil Williams. Student loan forgiveness, still kind of a, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just, still seems to be, I guess, some legal questions. This is the topic of my lineup column coming up this week. It concerns me, but this is the reality. Well, how about this? I'm just going to say this. Do we think, most of us can agree that this was unconstitutional. How do you feel? I mean, do you think that's the case? Well, I think it's unconstitutional, but then it gets to, what are you going to do about it? Has anybody thought about impeachment? That if the President of the United States is spending money and he's not authorized to, and we have determined that this is unconstitutional, and this cannot be a new precedent. This cannot be something that we're going to do, that presidents can do from here forward, right? We got to make sure that constitutional order of some semblance is maintained. But the problem is, if you try to do this any other way, I guess, what can anybody do about it? So think of it from this standpoint. We talk about how this all works. Joe Biden, with his pen in his phone, says, I'm forgiving $10,000 of student debt. Everybody, guys like you and I, say, no, that's illegal. That's not constitutional. The Congress has the power to purse strings. Okay, we'll do something about it. Well, somebody's got to take him to court, right? but it's not clear anybody has standing to do so. Okay. And even if they, if Congress tries to sue, the courts would say, Congress, why don't you pass a law or defund it and tell him he can't do that? So the courts aren't going to side with Congress. They're just going to say, use your power. Don't bother us. We're separate but equal. We're not going to do your dirty work for you. Okay? Then what's the remedy? Well, obviously, Congress is so divided, they can't really do that. However, if Republicans have a majority, a simple majority in the House of Representatives here in a few months, then why not put this up and debate the constitutionality of it? Well, the one problem there, perhaps, I guess, would be such that we would have to say, hey, you know that $10,000 you were given to forgive part of your student loan debt or all of it or whatever? You know what? You got to give that back. Those mean rascally Republicans, they don't want you to have that. But I guess all Republicans could do is get control of Congress and call Biden's bluff and impeach him, because they're not going to get a spending bill through the House. They could get through the House. It's not going to get through the Senate, I should say. Defunding this. So, I don't know. Let me know what you think of that. 251-343-0106. That's how to get in touch with the program. This the FBI is kind of spiraling out of control for them. I'm telling you guys that the more and more this comes out, you're already going to have half the country just rip-roaring mad about the way things are going, demanding some kind of scalp or some kind of action, some disciplinary action, something, right? But all it takes is one little small thing for the FBI to screw up, to get on the bad side of Democrats. It's over. Like this run of kind of being an extra, you know, constitutional branch of government, it's over. I don't understand this whole notion about the way the left views our law enforcement. That the Department of Justice, Jeff, has to be separate, away from the president. It has to function independently. We must do this for the democracy. We must do this to keep the republic together. That we must have a DOJ that is no politics allowed. It must be that way. And I'm just trying to, maybe somebody can explain this to me. Is that what we really want? Is that what you guys really think is a good idea? So this was what we heard during the Trump administration, right? Oh, no, you can't fire this guy. No, you must allow the Mueller probe to go on. No, you, even though you're the chief executive, you can't do this, you can't do that. No, 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 no. It doesn't matter if you're president. This is the way things are. I remember like the first or second day after being sworn in, Chuck Schumer telling Trump, you don't want to get on the bad side of the intel community. And Trump proceeded to get on the bad side of the intel community. And how'd that work out? Should we be tired of this? And this whole sort of political cabal within the FBI getting exposed is like, I didn't vote for the FBI. Did you vote for the FBI? Anybody here vote for the Attorney General? No, you vote for president. And the president gets to say the way that goes, right? I mean, all of that, all these cabinet departments and all of that, we don't get to vote for any of that. We vote for president. And if the president can't tell those guys what to do and how to run their cabinet department, then what's the point? Why not just have this police state running things? Sure. Well, Jeff, we got to trust these guys. They're looking out for our best interests. Apparently not. Apparently they are playing fast and loose with the rules, and they're doing what they got to do to get their guy elected. They're going around telling Facebook to the Hunter laptop, Hunter Biden laptop story is Russian disinformation, knowing all well that it's not. They panicked during the 2020 election. Now, Trump is out there trolling the media, saying we need a do-over. But the day is going to come when the FBI is going to have some of its power taken away. And that might make us less safe. But I think we're getting darn near close to this. I know only half the country is upset about this. Maybe half the country is cheering it on, but it won't be long, guys, until there is another Hillary Clinton sort of situation. It gets people upset enough at the FBI. Because remember, in the 2016 election, remember how people got mad at James? The left got very mad at James Comey. We heard all these people telling us that the FBI was Republican and the CIA was Democrat. But isn't that funny? We never hear much about the CIA anymore, but we hear a lot about the FBI and the DOJ and politics. And this is only sustainable for so long. I know. Well, the FBI is not going to rule the planet in perpetuity. It's just not. This is going to fall apart. They have gotten way too political. And all they got to do, like I said, is get on the bad side of one Democrat, a Clinton or an Obama or a Biden or something. It's over. Wait till the FBI has to go prosecute Hunter Biden. They will have to. And you'll hear the left start talking about, maybe we need to take a closer look at the FBI. Maybe they do play politics. But they can't do their job if they've ostracized half the country. Because at some point, they're going to ostracize the other half. It's just by virtue of, you know, the way the system is. That's going to happen. And it's just the house of cards will come tumbling down. This just can't last. They, you know, the absolute power corrupting absolutely theorem. Sure, are they left? Are they left of center? Are they progressive? Yeah. But in the eyes of a lot of these people, guys, it's ideology is just a kind of a ruse. It's a justification. The real objective is power. You run on the ideology to get the power in the minds of a lot of these people. You have very few true believers out there. You have people that want to do best for their community, but they're not wedded to the ideology. And sometimes doing best for their community is just part of, you have to play this game, right? Maybe you are a believer, but this is just part of the process. To go Robespierre on, I mean, you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs, guys. And this is just the way business is done. But business can't be done like that. It'll cause civil unrest. Lindsey Graham is right, and we haven't talked too much about this, so we can pick this up on the other side. But Lindsey Graham say they do try to prosecute Trump. I'd be worried. I'd be worried about unrest in the streets because it does appear to be very, very political in nature. We can discuss that amongst ourselves. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. We're told Pancho needs your prayers. It's true. Save a few. Mount Chihau is my Everest, and the Coosa is my now. Alabama's where I was born and raised, and I think I'll stay a while. We sing about sweet home and Dixieland delight. We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Got our next segment, Brian Dawson, 1819 News. So stay right where you are. 251-343-0106. So I got a few texts to get here. Oh, unnamed texter here, ladies and gentlemen. Do you ever have positive topics on your show? Why don't you listen to the show and then ask that question? Tim, the FBI is worried about working angles and making deals instead of prosecuting people when they find out they've committed a crime. And this is, defunding the Loan Forgiveness Act is going to be the key way to do away with this program. But Tim, I don't think you can get to the defunding mechanism. I don't think that, I just don't. I still think they can try to defund and it's not going to work. But you got to send a message that the president can't just, where there's a vacuum, the executive can't fill that void. I mean, it kind of already has, but it when it comes to something like this, I think an impeachment trial, it won't be successful. You won't get Biden removed. But it may make guys like that in the future think twice before just doing it willy-nilly. And then you put Democrats on the fence, right? Like, what is the legal justification here? Name texture, the president is not a dictator. He has to answer to the people. Does he? Does he have to answer to the people? I don't know. I mean, apparently not, because he's getting away with this. What are we going to do? What is the remedy, unnamed texter? Doug, have you ever seen a dog that is eat up with fleas? So goes this administration. The Democrats are in fear with fleas. Federal law enforcement agencies infested. I suppose, let's see, dirt. If Trump's children did what Hunter Biden did, the news would be wall to wall. Most big news outlets are in for the Democrats and swamp. It's always kind of been that, right? I mean, there's always been that element of the media being left of center, but it has gotten way more out of control lately. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It has gotten the people don't seem to be bothered by it. So back in the 2000s, I worked for a place called the, you know, we're going to hear from a gentleman that works there now, but I worked for a place called the Media Research Center, and this was back when you could make the case that the media were just, they were trying to be objective and impartial. And that was their argument, that, you know, the right whining and Fox News and talk radio, they were distorting your view of reality. That they weren't left of center. That was just a talking point to get you engaged. As time has moved on, though, it has changed to, well, so what? So what if we're left? What are you gonna do about it? Who cares? Who cares, and who's going to say anything about it? And that's where we're at. So, I mean, it's like we won the argument but kind of lost the ideological battle. Toothless Bammer, the remedy is what Aaron Rodgers said yesterday, vote Republican. Dan asked, what happened to Ricky? I have no idea. I had banned him, but then in a spirit of humanity, I unbanned Ricky, and Ricky did not take up his new privileges to participate in the program. Time to time, you have to ban people to send a message.
Song of the South, sweet potato pie and a shirt.
But if Ricky's out there, he's invited to participate on this program. Let's get a break, and we'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich.
All right, let's take it on down from Muscle Shoals to Decatur. Birmingham. Ooh,
to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Text line. That's how you get in touch with the program. Southern Comfort and Media Research Center. Brian Bradley. It's in about 30 minutes. Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kinnon will be with us in the 10 o'clock hour as well. And 11 o'clock hour, we'll wrap it up with former state senator and Right Side Radio host Phil Williams. That is yet to come, so keep it locked right where you are. Joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest. He is a actually my boss at 1819 News. But we got Brian Dawson on the line with us. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for making time. We always appreciate it. Let's kick it off here. So I think this is such an important topic, and I'm not necessarily my forte, these cultural issues, but there is clearly a war on manhood, if you will. But I think this is something that we don't get taught. It's taboo to talk about it because we need to be sensitive and aware of other people's perspectives. But you see it, the deterioration of society, I think, is some of it. You had a great conversation with Rick Burgess, a radio host, about this, Rick and Bubba fame. And I want to get you on talk a little bit about it. It kind of walked through us, like, with us, what do you think things are right now? And is there, you know, obviously we're giving it our all here, but turning the tide the other direction and kind of restoring some kind of traditional values.
Yeah, I think the key is courage. It's like you said, it's taboo to talk about it. But if you don't talk about it, that means that, you know, the lies are going to continue to fester. And we're going to be basing our society and our existence on things that aren't true if people don't have the courage to speak up. What's interesting is one of my favorite quotes by a guy named C.S. Lewis, like 100 years ago, maybe not quite 100 years ago, but he's identifying the problem all the way back then, and it's only gotten worse. He says, in a sort of ghastly simplicity, we remove the organ and demand the function. We make men without chests and expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst. We castrate and bid the geldings be fruitful. And so he's honing in on that, you know, 80 years ago, 100 years ago, whenever that quote was made. And it's just, it baffles me that we've just kind of continued on down that path. And I would say it was a problem then. It's an epidemic now. And our society it's almost a war on men. I'm actually doing a podcast later today that's titled that, The War on Men. And it's not to say that, you know, women aren't a value, but women aren't the ones that the war seems to be on right now. So masculinity is, you know, God made men and women different. He made men to do certain things, specifically protecting and providing. That's not to say that women can't do those things, but that's not what they were made to do. Women are more nurturing and caretaking. And that goes all the way back to the Bible in Genesis when it talks about be fruitful and multiply and subdue the earth and exercise dominion over it. The be fruitful and multiply part is more towards the women, and the taking dominion and subduing the earth is more where the men come in. And so anybody with two eyes and a brain can see the differences. So our society now, with gender transitioning and all this other stuff, is just taking this lie that there's not a difference between men and women to a whole different level. And it's interesting. So I have a bunch of kids. We're about to have our seventh. I will be having another girl here any day. And I've got a 3-year-old son and a 1.5-year-old daughter. And my 3-year-old son, when he was, you know, around 2, he would climb on things and he would pound his chest and, you know.
Break it up a little, Brian.
Oh, sorry.
There you go.
All right. But my 18-month-old daughter, she would, you know, she walks around with dolls and holds them and cares for them and pats them on the head. And so you can just kind of see built into their DNA is this, you know, these different aspects of us. And so when we as a society begin to lie about things and we start to build our society on a foundation that isn't true, we're going to have consequences. And specifically, the consequences that we're beginning to see we don't like the aspect of men that they're potentially dangerous, right? That they have the propensity for violence innate in them. And the problem is that the good men are the ones that are starting to submit to this thing. It's like, you know what? My masculinity is toxic. Maybe I should sand down some of my rough edges. And so we have feminized the good men, and now the only people that have the propensity of violence are the bad men, and now there's no one to protect us from the bad men, in a sense. Jordan Peterson talks about this, you know, a lot in his book.
Well, the interesting thing, and this is the way I think people ought to think about it, that, sure, equality, men and women being equal, but equal is not same, and we have gotten where we have blurred that so much that same, and it distorts the role, you know, that there is the head of the household, if you will, the role of the man in the family, but it has been downplayed in the name of the sameness. It's almost there's this perverse thing going on. It occurs to me, it just seems like this is all done as a way to for certain politicians to have a more direct path to power, right? That we're really tinkering with the family union for the sake of political power, right? And that, I mean, that is a house of cards that will not stand very long.
Yeah, and you being the head of the home, and suddenly you're one of these evil patriarchs that society, I have to check that out. But I think, you know, overall, people think I'm crazy when I say this, but if you go back to the Bolshevik Revolution, in Russia, you see, you know, Karl Marx's writings, and you see what Lenin did and what Stalin did, and their plan to move communism west through certain institutions because they couldn't do it by tank, affected all of our institutions. And they knew that the only way that they were going to be able to bring specifically America to our knees, that they destroyed even God, and that they destroyed the family as a nuclear power plant for culture building. Because the way God designed it is we hand our heritage and our beliefs and our customs and our wisdom through a family unit of a father, a mother, and children. You know, ideally going to church and learning about God created them, and we hand these traditions down through that system. And if they can come in and pervert that and destroy that, and then get us going to the government to learn what we should think about this and what we should think about that, they basically cut off that value system kind of multiplier, and they hand those things down. They cut it off at the knees, and then they can begin to come indoctrinate. And one of the craziest things statistically to see is people will call them secular humanists, leftists, whatever you want to call them. They're reproducing of about 0.8 children per couple, which is, you know, good. And then conservative, kind of more Christian families are at about 2.1 to 2.3. So they're right at reproducing to stay the same. And what's interesting, though, is that conservative Christians are losing numbers, yet we're having more children, and the left is not having less children, but they're growing. And so what that means is that they're stealing our children from us. We've resorted to allowing ourselves to be breeders for the left, because we take our children and we put them in these institutions where the left then captures them and disciples them and teaches them about their God of secular humanism in their ways. And so I read a quote online the other day that said, the left doesn't reproduce in the bedroom, they reproduce in the classroom. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, it's all about replacing, you know, religion and faith as your higher power, or family as your, whatever your higher power is, it replaced it with the government. And looking to government, and that's how you centralize, and, you know, that. And they would tell you, well, some people just don't have a father, Jeff, and they can't rely on, you know, this old antiquated notion that it's not that we're just doing this because we want to be all powerful. It's because we must do it, because there's just some people just don't have fathers, And they're using these problems in society, I think, as a justification for what they're doing.
Yep. And they've set up the government in order to incentivize poverty. So if you look in a lot of poverty-stricken neighborhoods in the black community and other, you know, communities where there's extreme poverty, the government has incentivized women to not get married and have a father in the home. Because if they say they have a couple children out of wedlock, they can get a check if they're single. And then government becomes daddy. Government's paying the bills. Government's providing. Government's protecting rather than a man, which is the way God designed it. And so they literally, if they bring a man into their house and they get married, then the government stops paying those bills. And so they're actually scared to go the way that God designed it because they might lose their provision. And so we're literally getting more of what we're incentivizing. And that's just a perfect example of where they're incentivizing fatherlessness. And then we see go into these poverty-stricken neighborhoods and see what that looks like. Not good.
No. And, you look at places where the government has, like I said, it's perfect. Where government has played that role, and it's just quality of life is not what it should be. Then they would argue, yep, we just need to put more resources or whatever there. But that's the whole problem with these socialism types of governance, that there's not enough resources to do that. Billy Graham, sometimes I'll read him, but it was like capitalism is a system for sinners and socialism is a system for saints. It's all predicated on this idea that what they want to do, that everybody kind of plays their role, does their part, but that's just not how the human element is. I mean, that's not how human nature operates. We're all fallen, and you need to, you can't just do something because it works out on paper, right?
That's right. I can go on for days about the subject, and I know we got limited time. I want to tell a story that really exemplifies this. There was a research group in Africa that was taking elephants, and they took a bunch of elephants out of an area and then brought them to another area way far off from there. And the rigging and the straps they had, like, to move the elephants was not sufficient to take the big male bull elephant. So they just took young male elephants and female elephants and brought them to this new place. And then what they found was there was all kinds of dead animals and other dead elephants, and all kinds of just ridiculous amounts of, horrible things that these young male elephants were causing. And they came to find out that all these dead animals and everything, it was because these young elephants were mauling these animals. And they're like, what in the world is going on? And they tried to fix it. And finally, they figured out a way to bring in some of the male bull elephants, the bigger, mature male elephants. And they brought them in to there, and they saw how those big bull elephants would basically put the younger ones in check and show them how to be mature bull elephants that don't go around doing that kind of stuff. It was like a one-to-one of what we see in society when godly, mature Christian men were just men that value honor and good things. When you put them in a society, they're bringing order to chaos. But when you remove them, there is no order. There's no order to be brought to that chaos.
Whenever you talk about this, Brian, I see it from time to time on social media, but the pushback to this, and I don't fully understand just the vitriolic reaction by some to it, but it really has caused a problem here. And for those that look at this as a vulnerability in society, something that needs to be improved upon, the pushback is always like, I mean, that's the troubling aspect, that you're not supposed to think this. How dare you, sir? And it offends people in ways that is, to me, just not very rational.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that they've overplayed their hand in this place because, you know, there was a time when it was like the difference between the two wasn't so huge that you would almost feel the pressure. It's like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't be saying that, you know, women's rights and all that stuff. And, you know, I don't know. Well, now they're literally mutilating children's genitals so that they can be, you know, a girl can be a boy or a boy can be a girl, and they're, you know, not telling the parents. I mean, there's all this craziness that's going on. And so now it's almost like it makes it easier for people to just stand up and say, hey, look, guys, we're being lied to. There is a difference between boys and girls, men and women. Their functions are different. And if you have a biblical worldview, there is a hierarchy. There's a thing called headship. Headship doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean that men are more valuable than women. It doesn't mean that they're better. It doesn't mean from a value standpoint that one's superior and one's inferior. But it is God saying, hey, inside of a household, the man has the authority, which means he's going to be held responsible by God for what he does in that household and how he uses that authority that he's been given. Because if you don't have it, it's kind of, it's craziness. And so there's order, and so God designed it that way. So you can come out and say that now, and then you can point at the opposite and look at the ridiculousness of it. Before they overplayed their hand and went into this whole wild transgender sex transitioning children stuff, you didn't have that just, you know, this is like, you go that way, that's kind of where that's the natural outworking of that logic looks like this. Over here we have this, and that's more valuable, and you can see the fruit of what each one produces.
Brian, we're up against a break here. Before I let you go, folks want to hear more about this. You talk about this a lot on your podcast and other things. Tell where they can find that.
Yeah, so 1819 News, the podcast, is a podcast that we started. We wanted it to be a news and culture podcast, but it quickly turned into bringing people on to talk about how we can have a free and flourishing Alabama, and always got down to biblical manhood, fatherhood, and things like that. So it kind of became a common theme. And so you can find that podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, when they don't kick off my episodes, Rumble, really wherever podcasts are found. And then obviously 1819news.com, go there and subscribe to the newsletter so that you're getting all the news you need, all the opinions that matter, and all the podcasts we produce.
Brian, we got to leave it there. Thank you very much. We'll do this again soon.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Out of love in the same dollar. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera. It's getting crazy. I'm getting hammered. Sitting right here at the Florida family. At the Florida family. I fly a starship across the universe divide, and when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying right where you are. I do appreciate it. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program. Still to come on the program, Brian Bradley, the Media Research Center. That's in the next segment. Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kinnon. And we'll wrap it up with Right Side Radio and the Alabama Policy Institute's of Phil Williams. So that's in the 11 o'clock hour. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. Doesn't have meta. Ricky moved on. He has no time for you and your bands of truth here. But you're still here, meta. I bet you have meta. How's that for some truth? Let's go, Don. Good morning, Jeff. Well, good morning, Don. Quick question. How many agents at the FBI do you think will throw themselves on the sword or to at least try to postpone this Hunter Biden investigation prior to the November elections? And how high do you think it may go? It's like, I don't think they think they're doing anything wrong. Don, I think they think that they are protecting the country by trying to keep Donald Trump out of office. It's a perverse mentality, but they think that they're the righteous actors here, some of these FBI agents. I mean, you saw the way Peter Stroke, the smugness, the, like, you know that we elections are too important to be left up to voters kind of mentality. The seat of power. We can't leave it up to those rubes. We can't. No, we're not going to do it that way. And I mean, it's something very, very. So even if they think they're right, do they not think that at some point this could be abused? There's no check on that. Do I think FBI agents will throw themselves on the sword? Maybe. Because, you know, Don, I tell you, I think on the other side of this, if you are known to be a true believer, a true warrior or the progressive left. They will take care of you. You'll wind up in good shape. I just do what you got to do to hold it off as long as you can. All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I keep on rolling with the flow.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying right where you are. 251-343-0106. Text line if you want to get in touch with the program. So to come on the program about a half hour from now, the mayor of Orange Beach, been in the news a lot lately, Tony Kidden. But he is a favorite of this program, so we look forward to that. Also, former State Senator Phil Williams, the host of Right Side Radio, where you can hear me also from time to time. But Phil will be with us here in a little over an hour, so you also want to stay right where you are. In the meantime, keep your texts coming. I will get to them as soon as I can. Joining us now is our Tuesday regular. Always a pleasure to bring on this next gentleman. Watches the media at my old stomping grounds, the MRC, the Media Research Center, that is Brian Bradley with us. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, man. How are you doing, Jeff?
Doing well, doing well. Thank you for coming on. Well, let's kick it off here, and you're probably sitting there thinking, "Well, we told you so." Not many of you didn't have to convince very, very many of us. You told us so, but the as it turned out, Mark Zuckerberg was. We found this out on Joe Rogan's podcast that he was told by the FBI, by federal law enforcement, to proceed cautiously with the Hunter Biden laptop story because it was clearly Russian disinformation, as we are now finding out that not to be the case. People are starting to say, hey, what was the FBI doing here and why were they doing it? And a lot of things are starting to fall into place.
Yeah. What's most interesting to me about that interview, Jeff, is that the Facebook CEO said he couldn't remember whether the FBI specifically requested he remove that one Hunter Biden story or whether it was a more general request. So Zuckerberg comes out during the Joe Rogan interview and he says the Hunter Biden story, quote, basically fit the pattern of disinformation that the FBI was looking to censor. But remember that letter signed by 51 former intelligence officials that said the Hunter Biden story had all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation? I mean, I think it's almost like the establishment was saying during that time in the lead up to the 2020 election, you know what we want you to do. There was a clear pressure campaign for members of the intelligence community to move against Donald Trump and by proxy attack conservatives. And Facebook followed the FBI's guidance.
Well, you know, very much the FBI's guidance, but there's also, you know, it's no secret, I suppose. There's a culture there at Facebook. I mean, that they didn't do this without, they didn't do this with much pushback, I guess, much resistance. This is sort of the way they wanted to, handle it.
No, and our reporting has shown, as long as I've been at Media Research Center, which is coming up on a year now, that Facebook always censors in favor of the left. It always censors conservatives. So it's no surprise what side of the ideological spectrum that they're on. So they were all too happy to follow the FBI's request in this regard, I think. Even Zuckerberg, it almost seemed like Zuckerberg was trying to hide for himself or cover for himself when Rogan asked him, hey, did the FBI specifically ask you to censor the Hunter Biden story? Zuckerberg's like, well, maybe, I don't know, I can't remember. It's, you know, that's the kind of behavior that people who are doing something wrong do, or people who are trying to cover for another party engage in. There was nothing that kind of spoke to me that Zuckerberg was trying to be accountable or handle this in an unbiased, objective way.
Yeah, they they do tend to target conservatives, as you say, and it never goes the other way. I think this, Brian, and this is kind of a more broad question about Facebook. Why Facebook is not as, I mean, it's still not great, but it's not as bad as, say, like a Twitter or any of these other platforms. But
right.
They need conservatives as their customers. They cannot, their business model for it to succeed, for Facebook to grow, to meet these growth projections, for it to continue down this path as sort of the giant in the whole social media realm, they cannot ostracize 50% of the country, because that seems to be the mistake some of these other platforms are making, and that's why there's all these other alternatives to, like, a Twitter popping up. But I think that, you know, Zuckerberg, he's aware of this, that he knows that he doesn't really necessarily want to play this game, but it's kind of a necessary evil. But all it takes is conservatives, and not to call him for a boycott or anything, but if he starts losing conservatives, that his entire business model's in trouble.
Yeah, and you and I were talking about this last week about boycotts, and it's going to take, I think, some serious thought from conservatives. I know, I mean, you might be against them, and a lot of people in the movement might be against boycotts as an ideological or practical measure, but I think you are going to see a lot of conservatives start to leave these apps, start to leave Facebook, because Facebook is so in the tank for Dems and so in the tank for liberals. I mean, they kind of play this game where they say, well, we outsource our fact checking and our fact checkers are all third party. But if you look at these fact checkers, they're all under this international fact checking network umbrella. That's a proper noun, by the way. It is hosted by Poynter. And it's funded by George Soros, so follow the money. I mean, there's a leftist plug-in almost everywhere you look on Facebook, and it's going to take a serious reckoning with that company culture and some deliberate efforts to hire more conservatives, you know, which I know that these tech companies are hesitant to do, in order to turn the tide and give Facebook more credibility.
Well, I'll tell you what about that, and it may not be a boycott, right? So, and I'm not necessarily against using economic might to achieve a political goal. I don't understand why conservatives think that boycotts are taboo, but I think it's this, Brian. I think if they start kind of filtering out conservative content, if they stop filtering out crazy uncle memes or whatever, that people will... It's not meaning what their expectations are. That's part of their world. That's part of their ecosystem. That is what they want Facebook to be. And if you start taking that away, people will say, well, this isn't, you know, this isn't the same product that I known and love. I'm going to go, there's no elsewhere to go, but maybe I just shut it down. I don't want to see, you know, advertisements for soy milk or, you know, like all this left of center or whatever dribble, you know, telling me, you know, that there's no such thing as gender. I don't want to see none of that. I got better things to do. I'm going to move on from Facebook. So the business model in that sense is fragile, because they have to, I think, allow a certain element of conservative content through their filter. If they don't, people will just walk away from it. That Mark Zuckerberg is aware that people's politics probably aren't going to be, some people's politics won't be swayed like a lot of these masters of the universe in Silicon Valley think that they can. And the bottom line for him is he wants to have a successful business and be rich. And he's got to play the political game, fine, but he's not going to jeopardize Facebook and his success for a presidential election or whatever.
Well, we've seen Facebook kind of in coordinate. I don't want to say coordination, because I don't know if they talk behind the scenes or not, but we've seen Facebook at the same time as Twitter and the Chinese government-aligned TikTok come out with these election misinformation centers. So that doesn't stoke a lot of confidence on my part in Facebook that they're going to do the right thing and be unbiased. I mean, you do have Zuckerberg kind of, you know, playing the game a bit more than maybe Twitter, and, you know, Zuckerberg a little bit more out in front going on Rogan and, you know, kind of other public venues talking about Facebook and its dedication to, you know, balance and things like that. But, you know, let's face it, Facebook's kind of screwed itself. It kind of followed the trend of these other social media platforms. I guess they were all part of the same trend where they wanted to create a safe space for a certain group of people who complained about certain ideas that offended them, certain abrasiveness by the former President Trump, certain ideas on the right, I guess, against transgenderism, things like that. So Facebook, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, where Facebook now has to censor anything that calls into question transgenderism or pro-choice ideology, anything that questions that. And if it doesn't continue to double down on its woke ideology, then it's going to lose people on the left. So do you keep people on the right at the expense of losing people on the left? I mean, that's a really stark choice that Facebook is facing right now.
Yeah, and I sometimes don't think about it like that, that the left is going to be demand more. They're going to demand Facebook be an activist, if you will, that they, there's a social responsibility, and they've been successful. So we shouldn't underestimate the left, but they've been successful in other private sector endeavors, right? They've been successful with corporate America in kind of forcing their agenda in the door. So, I mean, who's to think that Facebook won't be susceptible to the same? But I still think that they're going to have to allow some of that, but they know they have to be very careful here. Mark Zuckerberg and his shareholders have a certain expectation to beat the street. They got to do this, and if they get too invested into politics, I think they worry about that. And maybe that's this kind of mealy mouth approach. Why we're seeing the way Zuckerberg is handling it.
Yeah, well, you think about antitrust. I think that is the one incentive that Facebook has to treat conservatives well, because they know that Democrats are not going to rule Congress forever. And there's been bipartisan support for antitrust legislation. But I think because Facebook does Democrats' bidding, that Democrats haven't been serious about advancing any legislation like that. But once Republicans get in, they might have more incentive to go against Facebook because of how they've treated conservatives on the platform. So if Zuckerberg has any reason to treat conservatives well and be fair, I think the threat of antitrust legislation from the right, not so much the left, is the biggest thing that he has to fear.
Well, is there really, and I don't know, I don't think about social media this way. Is there really a substitute for Facebook? Facebook is kind of the Walmart of social media. It does a little bit of it all. And if conservatives walk away from it, and I think they could, would they, there's nowhere else really for them to go. They would just not have that in their lives anymore, perhaps.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of my friends who have dropped Facebook, who have dropped Twitter, especially over the last couple of years during COVID and all the racial things that we saw, kind of the racial animus that we saw, just kind of percolate across the platforms after the George Floyd riots and Black Lives Matter coming after the right. I mean, it kind of became a toxic breeding ground for, just all this animosity between people over the last couple of years. So I think a lot of people have made that decision that they don't need it in their lives. But to your point, I mean, there is no alternative. I mean, if you want to be involved in a political discussion, social media is kind of the place where it happens. We just saw Google Play. I don't know if you saw this, Jeff, but like an hour ago, Google Play just dropped Truth Social from its app store. So the alternative to the big tech platforms like Twitter, like Facebook, I mean, they're becoming more and more sparse because, again, it's leftists in charge of Google Play. It's leftists in charge of the Apple App Store. So you're going to see a shrinking landscape for alternative platforms to Facebook and Twitter in the years ahead. That's just the reality that we're facing. I don't mean to give you a black pill or anything, but we're just in a really, really tough landscape for conservatives right now, especially on social media.
It's remarkable just the power they have and how they're so free willing exerting it. But Brian,
it's huge.
Yeah. Well, we get to break. Folks will check you out on social media. It's funny we plug it. And or they would just want to check out the Media Research Center. Tell them how to do so.
Sure. So you can go to our website if you want to avoid social media. You can go to newsbusters.org/free speech or censortrack.org. That's our big tech censorship database. I would appreciate it if you followed me on Twitter. I'm at BrianBradley12. You can find me there. And you can follow Free Speech America on Twitter as well.
Brian, have a good week. We appreciate your time, but we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good, Jeff. Take care.
All right, guys, we got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. The Cadillac can. 'Cause you see, I'm a dinosaur. I should have died out a long time before. Have pity on a dinosaur. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. 25 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday morning, 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Coming up next segment, Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kidden will be with us. Looking forward to that discussion. Always a lively discussion with the good mayor from down at the beach. Let's see here, John. Conservatives need to start boycotting now because someday it will be too late. That's the problem, though, John. I don't think conservatives are really good at boycotting. I don't think they think that way. So it takes a certain kind of person to be progressive and liberal. It takes a certain kind of person because, I mean, the whole idea of liberalism is this, that you put your politics above your spiritual life, your family, that the real person you look up to, you need a role model, it is the president or some kind of head of government. And so you're willing to engage in boycotts. You're willing to think about that. When you go to the store, you're willing to think about this stuff. You have time for that. That this is such a big, plays a big part in your life. You're willing to do that. So therefore, executing a boycott for the left, it just seems more natural. Whereas the right, they don't think that way. The right doesn't, you know, conservatives, they got other things going on. They put other things ahead of all this politics. And I think that's just by nature, it makes it hard for conservatives to engage in a successful boycott like the left can pull it off. Dirt, paid by the swamp, protect the swamp. Daniel says this, reporters need to walk away from social media. No one cares to read stuff from Twitter or Facebook. Try a newspaper. Remember that. Now, I hate to tell you this, but the reality for me, a guy who covers the news, all of these other news outlets, I mean, they all post their stories. It is just the convenience outweigh the terrible politics of these outlets. And they create a good product. They create a very convenient product. Now, I have my Twitter, if you will, configured in a way that I go around their algorithms. So a lot of us use TweetDeck, and it's just a live stream of what people are putting out there. If you use Twitter the way Twitter would have you use it, they set up an algorithm that you have to follow, that you follow along with, that picks out tweets for you. That's useless. That is useless. It's dated. You can't use Twitter the way that Twitter wants you to use it. You have to use it your own way, if that makes sense. Facebook, I put my dog and baby photos on generally. I do put my show list, by the way, but very few are friending me for that hot scoop. Don, hey Jeff, hey Don, what part do you think the social media platform that Trump started will play in the November election, if any? I'm wondering if this is a go-around for the next 2 years. That curiosity in his platform might put the Democrat cat on the rails of the Trump train. All aboard. Probably not. True Social just isn't there. You're going to have Twitter start going down again. Twitter has been around a lot longer than y'all realize. It may sound, it's 2022, but I first got on the Twitter train in 2008. It seems like this is a new thing, but it's not. We're pushing 15, 16 years of Twitter. But it just, for me, it's just something that's, you know, it's not even about followers. I mean, yeah, you like to promote your content, promote this radio show. But I am more of a taker of Twitter than I am a giver. While I do appreciate your follow, twitter.com/Jeff_poor, I, you know, it's how you use it. Tim says Tony needs to ease up on that short man syndrome. I don't exactly what you're talking about there. But let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Blessed Graceland whispers to me. Carry on, sweet Southern comfort, carry on.
Back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very, very much for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Coming up in about an hour from now, Phil Williams from Right Side Radio joins us. Keep the text coming, guys. 251-343-0106. We're wide open after our next guest, so we will respond accordingly, time permitting. Joining us now, always a pleasure to bring on our next guest. Very kind to this show. Comes on usually when we ask, and we're appreciative of that. Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kinnon. Mayor, good morning. How are you?
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate you asking me, buddy.
Hey, thanks for making time. Before we get into the nitty gritty here, how has the season been? We're winding down. You got a Labor Day coming up here. The show goes on beyond Labor Day, obviously, but you feel pretty good about where you're at.
Yeah, the summer was really good. I mean, the rain was frustrating, and you know, it always makes it more difficult when people are in their cars moving about and not enjoying the beach or the water, but. But as far as numbers go, it was a really good summer. So we can't complain. We're blessed.
Well, that's good to hear. New school system here. And you know, and talk to us a little bit about that. How is that going? A lot of changes in Orange Beach, obviously. But how is that coming along for you?
Well, it really went well. You know, we, in record time, did the separation and breakaway from Baldwin County. But we have a great staff, very professional. They knew what they were doing, and school essentially started without a hitch other than the computers, which is always a problem. But for the most part, everything's good, you know. It's going to take some getting used to doing things a little differently down here, but that's okay.
Well, and I guess this is like, there's no, or maybe there is, but maybe not in this part of the state, I suppose. Obviously, I guess what Saraland recently, but is there really a good playbook for that when you're part of a system and then the municipality decides to go in its own direction? Do you have a certain guidelines or things you need to adhere to do it successfully?
Well, there's the checklist of the mechanics of actually making the separation, forming the school system, making sure you can afford to do it because it gets very expensive when you separate out as a city. But then it comes back to the philosophy of the leadership and the belief system of the leadership. And for the city of Orange Beach and our school system, we're very old school. And we're going back to reading, writing, and arithmetic and take all the other nonsense out of it and focus on getting our kids prepared for life. Our goal is they will go out and make a difference in the world. But the big thing is getting rid of the distractions that are in most school systems that has nothing to do with education.
What does that do for a community when you have your old school system and you're not part of the county or some other bigger entity schools? You know, that does it. Do you feel like that's something that sets the community apart from maybe other communities that are around?
Yeah, it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to us. I mean, you now have 1,200 students, your school board are all members of the community. They live here. The community buys in and takes ownership because everything now is locally decided. You're not trying to compete with a template of 40,000 kids and all different type of turf battles and different philosophy. So, I mean, I can already tell the difference that's made in our community. And from a financial end, people moving in, property values going up. It's just, and I'm a believer everything should be local. Everything should be small. Everything should be held. Everybody should be held accountable. You cannot do that in these mega systems, no matter how hard they try.
Yeah, well, there's just that spirit of community, I guess, that in this the school system in a lot of places tends to be in athletics or whatever it may be, the academics especially, but it tends to be kind of a central focus where the community rallies around and it becomes something that the community is identified by or identifies with.
And I agree, because we become ourselves. We're individuals, and we get to go the direction we want to go, not the direction we are directed by folks that don't live here. And that does make all the difference in the world, but it also creates a much more efficient system, a more effective system, greater economies of scale when it comes to accomplishments, not just this idea that because you have large numbers, you save money, you can do it efficiently. That's just false. And so I said it's the best thing we've ever done. I think the community believes it's the best thing we've ever done. And we have goals. I'm an outcome-based person, and we're going to be the best in the state. And if we don't, then we fail. And anything less than that is a failure. So we have very lofty goals. Don't want to sound arrogant, but there's no excuse that we don't achieve them.
Well, that would be the impetus, right, that you have these goals in mind and you think you can do it better than the status quo, so that would be the whole justification for going in the direction that you guys went, right?
Yes, sir. I agree. We don't have to give somebody permission to be innovative. You know, we don't have to give somebody permission to do things, or the teachers union to get permission to do things that makes our teachers' lives better and creates a classroom that's more joyful for them to be in. You know, our students are going to learn work ethic, discipline, courtesy, respect, and community service. That's the foundation. They're going to learn that whether anybody likes it or not. And that doesn't cost a dime. Not a dime to teach that and expect that from your students. And that's where we're starting. And I think as we build on that, everything else falls into place.
Joined by Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kinnon here on the program. Mayor, making some news lately. I think you have, since you have drawn the ire of one J.D. Crow, I think you have, you're right over the target, is probably as some would say. But the badass coffee, not being a proponent of that, talk to us a little bit about that and your objections.
Yeah, well, first off, J.D. used to be a very, very clever cartoonist. Now he's just become a political hack. He's demeaning in everything he does. He didn't even show me the courtesy of picking up the phone and making sure he had the facts correct before he depicted me as some type of bigoted or whatever he was trying to accomplish. And, you know, that's pretty cowardly in my opinion. But at the same time, I wear it as a badge of honor, because if J.D. Crow doesn't like what I'm doing, I must be doing something right. But unfortunately, the media took this and created a controversy that never existed. We never had a conversation with Badass Coffee. We don't even know who the owner is. They're not local. We never had a discussion. We were in a council meeting the other night, and a question came in through Facebook, because we Facebook Live our meetings, and asked, why are we letting this sign come into town? And the response was that they have a right to be here. Legally, we have no right, no foundation to sue them, and we have no intentions of pursuing a lawsuit. We have no intentions of denying them a business license. They have the right. Then a few of us made our own personal opinions known of, well, we don't appreciate the sign. It doesn't fit in with our brand, and our brand is family friendly. So we won't be buying coffee there. And if you don't like the sign, don't buy coffee. But they will be here. That was the end of the story. It was no big deal. But unfortunately, WPMI put out some headlines that made it sound like we were in a war with Badass Coffee and we're trying to keep them from coming into town, which is just absolutely false.
So this sounds more like a kind of a media clickbaity eyeball Facebook sharing kind of thing. That not really. This isn't the biggest thing going on by far in Orange Beach, despite what the media's portrayal has been.
Exactly right, and I'm so sad that now we've got local fake news. And then that's exactly what it was, and it's despicable. But, you know, I'm old school, and I do believe that children's eyes should be protected from certain words, certain things, and we don't do a good job of protecting our kids' innocence anymore. You know, we call ourselves Mayberry at the beach, and I never remember Andy or Barney or Floyd the Goober or the Darlings or Ernest D. Bass or any of those characters ever using a vulgar word on the TV shows I used to watch in the 60s, and it was still the funniest show and probably the greatest show of all time. So in my day, vulgarities were just not accepted in the presence of women and children. They weren't accepted in social situations. Now, behind closed doors with adults or wherever, that's a different story. But we show respect for our children and their innocence and ladies and the situation. And I still believe in that. I'm just sick of what we've become where it's not, you're only cool if you drop an F-bomb every other word. I don't know how we got to that point that that's cool, because I will never be cool. And but I'm no prude, Jeff. I mean, it's well documented. Saturday night, me and my wife go out. We have a date night. I got to have a drink if I'm going to dance. She's got to have a drink if she thinks I can dance. So we're no prudes, but you know what? We're in the company of adults. There's no kids there, and we don't do it in front of our kids. And that's my only argument is let's sort of do something toward protecting our kids' innocence and quit desensitizing them to these vulgarities at a young age, because once they become desensitized that at a young age, then it just leads them to move further and further into things such as pornography, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, again, everybody's going to make fun of that position, but it worked when I was young, and I do believe my childhood was a much better childhood than the one I'm raising my child in today.
I mean, Mayor, it sounds to me like this, and I'll let you speak kind of on behalf of Orange Beach, but there seems to be, at least from whenever we talk to you, that you don't shy away from the traditional values, or even some might say conservative values, but is sort of the brand of your municipality is as such that we welcome all, but we want to make this a place where traditional values can thrive.
That's exactly right. That is our brand. And I introduce, when I do welcomes all throughout our city with our conferences and wherever I'm at, I tell folks we are, our brand is traditional values, family values, conservative values, and we don't shy away from that no more than Pepsi-Cola or Coca-Cola allows their brands to be denigrated. That's who we are. And I do think that's what separates us and sets us apart from all the other resort towns. It's like when we went down there and put an ordinance in place that you will not put vulgarity and T-shirts here in front of the register for children to see. You will lock them up and they will have to be under 18. We caught heck from all the rabid far-left nutcases. But you know what? Our numbers grew because families appreciate those kind of stands. Families want to come to places that recognize and want to protect their children and provide safety and cleanliness. And we stand by our brand, and we have no intention of demeaning it if we can help it. I don't know why that's even an issue. That's just like Badass Coffee has the right to name themselves what they are. We have the right to determine what our city is going to be. We're not going to be an MTV spring break city. We made that very clear. And that, in turn, grew our number of families during spring break. It's the most successful marketing campaign we've ever done, is telling folks, we're not going to be MTV down here. And it works.
Yeah, you set yourself apart from the Panama City beaches. You even set yourself apart some ways, in subtle ways, from like Dolphin Island or Destin or 38 or whatever it may be, that there is a marketplace and people's preference. They could go to whatever community they see, but Orange Beach is distinct in that regard.
I think so, and I think, you know, it's a business decision as much as it is a philosophical belief system. And from a business perspective, our creating a unique niche in the tourist business, I think, protects us from economic turndowns more so than being one of the others, a run of the mill. So we work very, very hard to present that brand of family values, traditional values, conservative beliefs. And I make no apologies for it. and in no way will I ever apologize for it.
Mayor, we'll get you out of here on this. I know you're tight on time, but let's talk about the dreaded H-word hurricane season coming up. It is something that I guess is always on your mind. You're always probably looking at the tropics. Do you feel how do you feel about what's ahead? Do you feel prepared?
Well, I have the best staff in the world, so I don't even have to worry about it, Jeff. We've been through, when you go through the oil spill, everything else becomes a piece of cake. But we were prepared. We knew how to react when Sally hit. So while we never want to see it again, we're not worried about our response because we are prepared for it. And we will do everything all to set records on getting this place back in business and everybody in their homes after it happens. So, and you know, I've learned, I've been doing this long enough, that I got to quit worrying about the things that I just have absolutely no control over.
Well, it's one of those situations, you're just as ready as you can be given. You're never 100% ready because it's an act of God, but that you know the drill, that people know how to react. A lot of it's that, just not being caught flat-footed, right?
That's right. I say, you know, if you get injured or hurt in a hurricane, you're not very smart. Because they don't sneak up on you. It's not a tornado. It's not an earthquake. It's not a wildfire that you never expected to come your way. I mean, you know they're coming. You know what the precautions are. You know where you need to be. You know whether you're in a low-lying area or not. You know whether you're in a mobile home. I mean, it's just something that if you live on the coast, it's something you live with. It's part of doing business and living here.
Mayor, we appreciate your time this morning. Best to you, and we will try to talk to you again here sometime in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. And you know I'm here anytime you need anything, buddy.
All right. Thank you very
much. I appreciate you letting me set the record straight on that coffee shop. Because it is despicable what these WPMI and some of these others did. It really is.
Hey, well, we appreciate you coming on and using this platform to do so. Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kennedy, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
A couple guys in first class on a flight.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks you for staying right where you are. 251-343-0106. Wide open for the next few segments. So get them in while you can. Coming up here in about 45 minutes, former State Senator Phil Williams, regular on this program. Please stay tuned for that as well. Dirt Digger says, I'm a conservative. I go to work, pay my way. Liberals have money, and Democrats have government-free programs. That why they have time to protest. I vote every chance I get. Well, just unfortunately, here's the problem, Dirt. As you as a conservative, you have stuff to do. You know what? The liberals sometimes don't have stuff to do. Like, they don't have anything to do but go vote, whereas that becomes a problem. So sometimes they are incentivized to go vote, if you know what I mean. We'll pay you to go vote. That is something to consider, but that's the problem for the right a lot of times. Now, it's hard to get the left. A lot of people that would vote Democrat are very skeptical of the process. They're skeptical of government, yet they vote for more government. But they won't go. I don't know. Maybe they're worried about the government finding an outstanding child support payment or something like that. But there's a skepticism of the government. Or whatever it may be. Maybe they had trouble with the police once before, and that's a chilling effect. It's unfortunate, but Democrats have to overcome that a lot of times. But for the right, it's another way. It's the conservatives just are busy people with kids, and they got you know, their jobs and a hundred other things that just aren't as important to them, and they are willing to cede that ground. Backstrap says, Tony Kennedy should ban Rain in OBA immediately. Ask Tony if it's family friendly to punch people in the face at the floor of Bama. We said it was no prude, but you could have that. I think it's a brand. I don't think it's like uber family friendly, like the Joel Osteen touchy feely. I think it's more of a traditional, like, this is really how America is. Let's not sugarcoat it, sort of thing. And let's not be ashamed of it either. Mr. Kennedy, we will forgive you for taking the Ducks if you let us have a badass coffee. What about a Hard Rock Cafe at the Wharf? What would you think about that? Would Hard Rock Cafe come to Orange Beach? Are they trying? I don't know. Ben, local mayor doesn't like ass coffee. Story at 10. Buddy, DA Democrat voted Republican. Oh, this is a big story, guys, and I cannot believe I have not mentioned it till now. So the Democrat nominee for district attorney in Mobile County voted in a Republican primary and openly admitted as such. Go check that out. 1819news.com is the lead. Let's get a break in here. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
She said that all the railroad men just drink up your blood like wine.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Moore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very, very much for listening on this Tuesday morning, 6 minutes after the hour. Hour number three now underway. So 251-343-0106. Keep them coming, guys. The text it is, and I will respond accordingly. Coming up in about 30 minutes from now, 4th State Senator Phil Williams, also of the Alabama Policy Institute, and Right Side Radio, so make sure you stay tuned for that. We're going to break, and I should have mentioned this earlier, but now is the perfect opportunity to talk about this. And I was alerted to this. I appreciate people who tipped me off on these stories, but this is the reason Alabama needs to close its primaries. Moesha Donald, she is the Pritchard City attorney. I think she's does a lot of private practice. She is also the Democrat nominee in Mobile County for district attorney. Not a big deal, you know, DA is. She, as it turned out, voted in the Republican primary. Why would she vote in a Republican primary? She's a Democrat. Should she be voting in the Democrat primary? Now, she didn't have anybody running against her, so she couldn't vote for herself. She just wasn't on the ballot. She was assumed to be the nominee once qualifying closed. But she is on the ballot in November, but she voted in the Republican primary. And here's what she says. She owned it. She said, I voted in the Republican primary because I wanted to make sure my vote had an impact. There were several races in the Republican primary that did not exist in the Democratic primary because there was no candidate running in the Democratic primary, or because there was no contested primary within the Democratic Party. I am a Democratic candidate, and I also a strategic common intelligence voter. And then she goes on to say, there's nothing illegal or unethical about me casting my vote where it had the most local impact, especially for positions with whom I will have significant professional interaction. My core values reflect those of the Democratic Party, and after evaluating both ballots and all candidates, I voted in the Republican primary for the best candidate in each category. In November, it is my hope that all voters, regardless of political affiliation, will evaluate each candidate and his and her or her platform and choose the best person who will serve their community. And in my race, that's me. Okay, so you want the evidence continues to pile up here that Democrats just they are voting in the Republican primary. I don't think she's alone here, and she's right. She didn't do anything illegal or unethical, but it exposes a flaw in the system that has to be dealt with, because you're not getting the truest Republican candidate necessarily represents the Republican Party if you continue to allow Democrats to have a say in who they want the Republican nominee to be. And every time I bring this up, you guys will say, well, we need to make it where it's not taxpayer. So, well, that's just not going to happen. That's just not going to happen. But, you know, Democrats don't want closed primaries. Sometimes I guess Don will ask me, do you think the Democrats will vote for a weaker candidate to better their chances in a head-to-head matchup? I think sometimes that goes on. I think sometimes they would, sometimes it is a lost cause or whatever. But it's certainly something we need to be aware of. And then this is what, you want DeSantis. You want more conservative Republicans. You don't like this squishy moderate legislature. Start closing primaries. Make people who want to vote in the Republican primary declare their allegiance to the Republican Party, and watch how that changes. People that are ashamed of being a Republican typically aren't going to vote for the most conservative candidate. But that's just the way this is going to be. But here in Mobile County, I mean, that really, she voted Republican primary. I'm not as familiar with the bylaws. Somebody could text in 251-343-0106. If this were the Republican candidate or the Republican nominee, and it turned out that the Republican nominee had been shown to have voted in the Democratic primary, I think the party would have some questions about that candidate. And that candidate should be the standard bearer for the party. Where the Democratic Party not as strong, and they have a very weak leadership, and it sort of exists at the pleasure of Joe Reed, the party boss these days again, the way it had for decades prior to the short tenure of Chris England. They don't care about any of this. This is not on their radar, but it's certainly on the radar of Republicans. So the legislature in 23 will look at this. I don't know what the precise remedy will be, but I think we're looking at some kind of closed primary system in Alabama. And there will be, people just complaining about it. But here's what you need to know, guys. Other states do this. Other states have closed their primaries, and we have avoided mass hysteria, or they have avoided mass hysteria. But the Mobile district attorney, the Democrat candidate, she voted for Republicans in May. He could pass up the opportunity to vote for Kay Ivey and Katie Britt, I suppose. But whatever, she said that she just liked the better choices there, and she didn't do anything unethical or illegal, but it is on the shoulders of the Republican Party and the Republicans in the Alabama legislature. They want to change this to change it. 251-343-0106. That is the text line. John says she voted in the Republican primary because she was trying to save her democracy. Isn't it fascinating how much the left cares about what Republicans do and who they nominate? Do Republicans sit around? Do you hear these long, prolonged discussions on Fox News about who Democrats nominate? Because whenever you hear Republicans talking about Democrat candidates, it's usually in jest or some kind of mocking or something of that sort. But when it's MSNBC or CNN talking about the Republican side, oh my gosh, we got to have more normal. We got to have more John Hutsmans and Liz Cheney's and all of these sort of these types of those types of Republicans. We need it for our democracy. I mean, you kind of nailed it, John. But it's funny that the Democrats care so much about what Republicans do. Keep that in mind. You're going to hear a lot about this. This will become a big issue in this next legislative quadrennium about closing primaries. And I can tell you already, it's going to be Democrats who are going to oppose this. Why do Democrats care? Name texter, what is wrong with voting in Republican primary? We can vote too. Republicans are going to win in Alabama. That's a fact. We need a say in Alabama politics. There's nothing wrong with it right now, but Republicans, what is wrong with it is Republicans that need to be concerned, not Democrats. Hey, if you're a Democrat and you want to vote in the Republican primary, then have at it. But as a Republican sitting here today right now, a named texter, you're not getting, Republicans aren't getting, all you people that complain about Kay Ivey and you complain about Richard Stowe, those types of candidates, you don't like them. They seem watered down or diluted. It doesn't seem to be the Republican Party in Alabama, not as conservative as you are. Well, it's because you have, I don't think, you have some Democrats, but you also have these independents. You have all these elements that are pulling the party away from the conservative end of the spectrum to a more moderate, a more, business friendly, I don't vote for the party, I vote for the person types. And I think it dilutes the ideology of your political party. So that's what's going on. I mean, it's undeniable. Here's, another example of it. 251-343-0106. Fire dog, squishy legislator. If they were any more squishy, they would be jellyfish washed up on the beach. I don't think they're all squishy. So, the legislatures, it's a hard thing to understand. It's a leadership that I don't know that they even think about ideology. Because the Alabama legislature, they are ideological on a lot of social issues. But when it comes to the way money is spent, not that the how much is spent, but the way it is, what the state ought to do, where the state should put its emphasis, the state's tax structure, the state's education system, all of these things, you look at them, and they don't reflect like traditional conservative approaches to these issues. They look like something like a big business sort of corporatist. They're not woke leftists, but they're not libertarians. There's something very, very country club about it, right? But what you need to understand is it's the leadership and the way politics is played, and the politics of the chamber is as such that there's a lot of horse trading going on, a lot of deal making, and you focus more on that you got to do this to get this, and then if you need to scratch this person's back, well, you got to vote this way, because if you don't vote this way, then he's going to vote against your bill, and it's a messy, ugly sausage-making process. But a little of their discussion is, well, we can't do this, because it violates the way William F. Buckley would have done it. And that's what happens a lot of times in the Alabama legislature. It's not all on closed primaries or anything, but some of it is. Some of it is. You have all of these other things. They all add up in the aggregate, right? And they create the system that we have. Tim declares liberalism a mental illness. Well, thank you for that. Ben and Daphne, the party can have a candidate removed if they publicly support, endorse, or finance a Democrat candidate until the primaries are closed. There's nothing stopping the candidate from voting for a Democrat in private. Well, it's the other way around, though, Ben. It is the Democrat is voting in the Republican primary. The issue's not that. It is a Democrat candidate, a Democrat nominee, the standard bearer of a very powerful office, coming in and taking voting for the Republican Party, and that, I think there are others like her. So is she going to vote for the most conservative candidate, the most the most likely or able to win the conservative candidate? No. Let's see what we got here. Unnamed texter, will Democrats vote for a weak Republicans to increase their chances in the general? See Roy Moore. Also, with a closed primary, would we have seen more incumbents lose due to the gas tax vote? I think maybe to both of those questions. Well, but why take a chance, unnamed texter? Why not? We could just close this. Certainly, it would become, wouldn't fix it completely. It'd make it a lot harder for this to be a factor. Much more difficult. A named texter, it will damage Alabama if it became too crazy. If you say so, a named texter. 251-343-0106. Let's get a timeout in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. That is the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program. Phil Williams coming up in the next segment, so stay right where you are. Tomorrow on the program, all I got for you is Sean Ross, but we will have a guest list for you at some point. It could be by the end of this program, or it could be 8 o'clock. During that 8 o'clock window there, twitter.com/Jeff_Poor. I usually post a guest list so with their corresponding time, so you know what to expect on the program before it begins as a courtesy to you guys. So you don't even have to follow me on Twitter. All you got to do is you just go to that page around 8 o'clock, and barring some kind of last-minute frantic rush on my part, that is how you find out who's on the program. Dirt Alabama is changing because the voter base is going for big government jobs, and bigger companies will push to turn the state into union driven here. Here comes Georgia number two. Have y'all noticed the we talked to somebody about this, but the business recruitment in Alabama. Maybe it was Dick Brubaker, actually, that such a focus is put on economic incentives, but they tend to be economic incentives for non-union contractors or non-union shops or employers. Maybe that's a real thing. Maybe that's a real, real thing. And it's interesting you say that, Dirt, but I think this state is going out of its way to avoid unions, dominance in this state. Unnamed texter, Democrats will never have a say in our state government if we don't vote in the Republican primary. Unnamed texter, who cares? How about have better ideas and winning some elections or better candidates? You'll never have a say in state government because no one is buying what you are selling. That's what the issue is. I mean, Democrats do have a say. You go out and vote for your candidate who's lousy. It's not my fault that nobody in Alabama wants to buy into your dopey socialist ideas. You do have a say in the marketplace of ideas. Just no one agrees with them. And every state's unique. But all you got to do, I think you got to make a better argument to say if we do this, if we install all the great stuff that Joe Biden and Barack Obama had done while they were president, if we made that Alabama, we would be so much better off. If we had a runaway inflation, if we had abortion on demand, if we had more government handouts, boy, wouldn't Alabama just be so much better off? Wouldn't that be the right approach? I think you need to think about, maybe it's just you'll never have a say in state government because your ideas are terrible. John, why does a state dislike the unions? So unions are as American as apple pie. I don't believe all this stuff. They talk about unions being leftist and Marxist and all this kind of stuff. John, I hate to tell you this, but it's the pro-business, pro-big business thing, but I do think that big labor has, as of late, they have drifted in that direction. They have their masters in the Democratic Party that they have to answer to. And they better get on board or they're not going to be part of the process. They're not going to be in the game. I think big labor, Democrats are already skeptical of big labor because of Trump. But anyway, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. I've thrown away the blues.